Session number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, Reel 21.
Mr. Brown, Reel 21. What happened to you, Mr. Brown, after the Naples bombing raid?
Well, after our bombing session in the marshalling yards at Naples, we eventually, after a few hours, managed to get the lines clear, whatever. They got a train hitched onto a... They got an engine hitched onto our train, and off we went again. And we finished up. We didn't really go far. We went to an Italian prison camp called Capua. It was quite a large camp. There was two big compounds, and there was British, Indian troops, etc. But the Indians, the other colours, were segregated. They had just about one strip of barbed wire between, but they were in another compound, you know. And we got there, and there was very little... There's no bathhouse, anything like that. Didn't put your hair off, whatever. They just plunked you in, such as that. And there was a few wooden huts, and it was very hot, like being Italy, you know. And there was bunks there. They had one army blanket each, and an old palliasse. And it was rotten with bed bugs. You couldn't sleep at night. There was bugs as big as threatening places, you know what I mean? But anyway, you didn't know what the fuck was going here. We got in, and a couple of days we got organised, down one right, like, you know. Roll call each morning, you know, and such as that. And you got a little... Pani, a little loaf of bread, about as big as a bread bun, you know. And you might get a drop of something wet, spaghetti or whatever to go, you know, pasta and such as that. Wasn't very invigorating, but anyway, surprise, surprise, we'd only been there a few days and we got issue Red Cross parcels. We didn't know such things existed, like, you know, really. It worked out, I think, about one between two, you know. And the second week we got one a man, see. And what they had in the Red Cross parcel, you could get them, the best ones was Canadian parcels, mind. Like, we got used to these once we got into Germany. You didn't get them every week. Very rarely got a one, sometimes once a fortnight, once in 3 weeks and such as that. But there was Canadian, there was British, there was even bulk issue from Argentina. Because a lot of British people in Argentina, I suppose, how they got them right across the world, I don't know. But anyway, this was later on. At the moment, these were British parcels, but they were pretty well balanced. You got, there's a big bar of chocolate in, like, you know, plain chocolate-like, and it was sugared, mind, it was sweet, and there's a couple of tins of meat and veg. There was 40 cigarettes in, which was currency. You could buy Italy for cigarettes, like, and a bar of soap, which was another essential. Packet of tea biscuits, you know, the plain biscuits, and a little bit of cheese, a few odds and ends, like, it would very, very acceptable, like, for to supplement your diet, you know. Well, except for being very uneasy at night for the bed bugs, you could just so what you could lie about during the day, you know, and time was passing. And we had the usual sentry boxes round, you know, Italians in, like, very excitable, you know. Well, the toilets were just a long hut, maybe 50, 60 yards on its own, again the way, away from the other huts, you know. Well, the instructions were, if you want to use the toilet at night time, you have to stick your head out of the hut door and shout, Gabinetto, that's something the toilet like, shit house in Italian. So what used to happen? They used to stick their heads out and shout, Italiano, Gabinetto. So you mean the Italian shit house, right? Bang, 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 you know, they didn't fire at you. That sort of thing happened. But if you wanted to go to the toilet, shout Gabinetto or nothing else, and there's nobody fired, you know. A bit sharp arms going around, and, you know, the searchlights, and they didn't bother you. But anyway, Capua, what we saw, it didn't seem very big place, but there was a station there, you know. And something else we didn't know, there was this particular day, There was an ammunition train standing in the station. Why, I wouldn't know that either. But the other side of Kabul was a German airfield, fighter planes, you know, which saying these fellas taking off and this, that and the other. But what we should get about the middle of the day was an air raid by the Yanks. And, quite maybe 10, 15, 20 bombers. And they had lightness with them, two-engine fighter bombers, double fuselage fighter bombers, you know. And how much damage they did there, fairly doing that, but they swept in a couple of times and bang, 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 you know, this, that and the other. There's one of these lightnings got hit. He was coming down. Well, he still must have still had his, I don't know, they carry a couple of bombs or what. He jettisoned them and he hit the bloody station. And he set the ammunition train alight. Well, that was, we were maybe what? Just over a quarter of a mile away, a third of a mile, something like that. And the coloured compound was just nailing us over the wire. It was bloody chaos. They were going at one truck at a time, was bang, you know, it was the biggest explosion. There was bits of rail engine and flies and flying over the top. Where the coloureds panicked. They didn't climb over the wire to get into us. They shot straight through it, half the buggers was cut. The Italians were panic stricken, there was nobody, you know, and this, that, and the other. And but it went on for hours, like. But we didn't get the casualty list, but they reckon there's quite a few, you know, killed, the Italians around the ball. But we didn't have any casualties from the ball that I know about, but it was just panic stations with the coloureds, you know. All you could do was hit the deck, you know, but they were really enjoying the sight, most of us. But anyway, between us and the village was a big field, and in there was a little, appeared to be a church, a chapel, a broken down old place. Never saw anybody go near it, the big town were there. But this afternoon, later in the day, when the bombing raid finished, the Italian women were coming over there, they were praying, kneeling in the middle of the field all over, they were praying, aye. Just a funny sight to see, you know. Wouldn't happen in this country, but it's just peasant people, I suppose. So anyway, we went out fun there, like one thing and another, and we saved a bit of our Red Cross stuff. And all of a sudden, night time, panic stations, the Italians was there in bloody force, and had, not the Versailles man, the Italian paramilitary police, Carabinieri, they were there enforcing our naughty boys, have you that? And rounded everybody up out the camp and marched us down the other side of the airfield at the railway line. And the old trucks were there and they stuffed us in the trucks and off we went.
What date were you in this camp?
Well, we got took prisoner on the 17th of July.
Late July?
It'd be late July. It could only be late July anyway. And I said, hey, we had lost track of dates by now, and I can only imagine it was early August, but it might have been the end of July, you know. And the dead of night, we entrained at Capua and started them out to the north of Italy. We were given about four panniers and four little, you know, little bread buns, and a piece of steel chain, a few unripe peaches. I mean, it'd be full of little pieces, I thought it would have been but anyway, something put on your stomach anyway. This had to last roughly about 3 days. And we were continually stopping and pulling into sidings to let troop trains through going south. We finally got to a small village called Carpi. It's all maybe about 20 miles south of Bologna. You know, it was right out country district and such as that. See? And marched from the station, just about a mile, mile and a half. There was a brand new camp there the Italians had built. Mind that's all there was there. There was no food, no blankets, absolutely nothing. And it was early morning when we got there. And by this time there was maybe about 2,000 or more, like from Cucuna and that, from different regiments and all that, you know. They banged us into there.
You must have been pretty hungry by now.
Eh?
Pretty hungry?
Well, pretty hungry, yeah. You know, we'd kept a bit of stuff out of our Red Cross party, you know. But I mean, literally, you just happened to rinse it out, like.
Was this a hut?
But I mean,
camp?
After the, I mean, think to be fair, like, it'd hit you harder now, like, off our lifestyle now, but going through the desert, you didn't get much state. All the time you were on, your stomach must have been about that big, you know. You fit and all that, but, well, I think it was a good thing for you, really. Health-wise, it was dead, if you survived, you know. But,
Was it a hutted camp? Hmm? Was it a hutted camp? Huts?
I had a proper built by bricks and proper asbestos roofs and such as that, you know. Quite clean, it was spotless, but there was nowadays an absolute, but as I say, above all, there was no food. And Italian type of weather didn't know where they were at. But anyway, in the middle of the night, there was a commotion. Next morning, the Italians had gone, the Germans had took over. Well, we knew then Italy, our boys must have landed on the south of Italy or whatever, and the Italians had surrendered. We knew that was the obvious thing, you know. Okay? But we were desperate for food. So the Germans would know that. I don't think they'd tell much themselves. But what they did, it was being a farmer that drove a bloody big pig into the camp, kicked it in, So to put it the way I put it down, the coons got organised, the pig was killed, and as there were about 2,000 to feed, it decided to make a stew. We had kept our mess tins and managed to get about a pint of what looked like dirty water. But I'd like to remark on one incident. I never argue about religion, and in no way is meant to be an argumentative point. Well, there were two Catholic padres with us. And one of the Italians, they had a free rein. They could wander where they liked, you know. They'd probably get picked up in the desert or whatever regiments, I don't know, they were serving with. Now, the first thing you want to do when becoming a POW is to inform your next of kin. You are posted as missing, and that's it. They don't have you dead or alive, you see. And in some cases, quite a time may elapse before your family get to know. When you were established in a proper POW camp, you were given an airmail letter which travels to Switzerland before being sent out to your homeland. In this case, 2,000 of us in a queue for a drop of weak soap. The two padres had got hold of a couple of hundred or so airmail letters. They started at the back of the queue and were asking, "Are you an RC?" "Yes, Father." By the time they got 5 yards down the queue, everybody was an RC. Let me know. I'm picking an RC, don't get me wrong, like you might be one yourself. I don't know. But I'm not like, but no, religion doesn't enter in it. But I don't think these two fellows are very fair, asking who was RC. They should have had a raffle or somewhere, or some means of somebody's going to be lucky like. But anyway, including me, everybody was an RC when they got 10 yards down the line. So I've got the letters in stable enough, like, whether they ever got home or didn't know. And that's it. Just a few days passed in this camp, and we were off again. We marched down to Carpi, just a little village, you know, and the poor Italian people was waving at you and all that, you know, but there's as many British Germans as us, Tommy Guns and the lad. And the trucks were waiting, about over 50 in each truck, and mine is pretty, you know, especially in the weather. The door's bolted on the outside, and you have a little, at one end of the truck, you have a little window about 15 inches by 20 inches, you know, and that's let a bit air in, and you can see out there, but it's crisscrossed with barbed wire. Same way, it didn't take long to get the barbed wire off mine, but those tolls and no tolls, like.
Had you any thoughts of trying to escape when Italy went out of the war?
Well, that's why well, in time then, if the Italians had still been in, it would have been a doddle, but they were there, the bloody armoured cars, the lot, you know. See, but anyway, we packed into these trucks, we were given a loaf of bread, that's black bread, you know, and 8 inches of sausage and a piece of stale cheese. That was the usual German diet. This was to last several days. Again, continually stopping to let trains go south with men and material. It must be remembered that a lot of the men with us had been prisoners for quite some time, taken in the desert, half-starved, shortage of water, etc. So most of them were suffering from dysentery. Oh, really awful. With the heat, the stench was horrible. The doors were bolted on the outside. There was a small let hole at one end of the truck about 12 inches by 9. It was bigger than that. Those small cardboard boxes which the Red Cross stuff had been in, you know. And the dysentery cases were using these, you know. And Everything was thrown out of this hole. Say, which there's not as you can do with it. As we stopped at various stations, Italian women, to give them the due, were coming to the train and filling water bottles on every station. On every station, there were German sentries who did not object to this. The door was never opened. It meant handing them through the small hole, praying the train didn't move off till you got your water bottle back, you see. And on one particular station, the German guard would not allow the Italians to come near our truck. He even fired shots over their heads. At this station, we had quite a stare, so everything was laid on. He was standing on the platform just below our little hole. A cardboard box was prepared. This is true. Cardboard box was prepared, and the dysentery cases helped out, like, you know what I mean? They'd been busy. Eventually, you could feel the train getting stable, and as we started to move slowly forward, one of the witch shoved the box out of the little window and poured it over his bastard's head. And you still smell, I think. You can hear him shouting 5 miles up the line. Well, he asked for it, didn't he? Then, a smelly oat, 50 yard in, red hot, one thing or another, not too much food. The British always form an escape committee. So what they did, they got the barbed wire off this little hole, you see, and couldn't date was starting, as night time was coming in, it was getting dark. They put, not everybody wanted to go, but they put lots in, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and something near there. And as we were a mixed bag, like, Canadians, we had one Canadian there, I think, heard him lecture later on when we were in the Stalag, because he didn't get away, and he was a big, powerful bloke. I don't know if he'd been a trapper or a bloody lumberjack or not. He would have never got through the hole, he's that big, you know. He had the biceps, sorry, he's really strong, but he knew his job, like. So what they did, they got the, that had weighed up, they got the barbed wire off this hole, they got the hole wide in the cord, number one went through, and this Canadian, he just held him bodily, shoved him through a bit at a time, held him like that, swung him round, and in between the two trucks, you know, there's like the buffers, and there's some of them have like a little cabin on for German sentries, you know, they didn't have one on every one. The wide boys, I didn't weigh it up, but the wide boys have got the, there was one at the front, one in the middle, one at the back, like they have a bloody coal job. They travel on the train all night and such as that. And if they see anybody that's supposed to fire, they'd probably be frozen and half asleep. But anyway, you've got the first one round, and there's a rail comes down so you can help yourself up, see? Right, once you grab the rail, swung his foot, right, that was it. A lot of shouting and bawling. That's chaotic. And then the next one was a doddle, see? Once you got him through, got round, the block was already there. He got his arms and round. Not as easy as it sounds, mate. And he got him round, say, well, that's the way it now. Now, the train, no express, you know. And Italy being a mountainous country, something like chug, 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 chug. You're going very slowly up gradients and such as that. Why, how many made it and how many got hurt, I don't know. There's something you could never find out. But one would jump, the first one would jump, like, right, next one, you know, and that's the way it happened. Actually, I think it was about 7, I got out, you know, black dark. So, how they did it, they got the door open. So that was, the whole council say, right, no, right, the next stop. Anybody wants to go and get out, jump, you say. It was chug, chug, chug. The really train was stopping. We did not, was it? We thought we should go up a bank. Somewhere in Milan, the bloody train stopped, didn't it? And there's a few twinkles, but it was that quick, you know, off goes the doors are all shut out. It was great, there was a German regiment sleeping on the platform. Well, you've never heard of. Now, I think there's still about 3 got away. Why, the bloody carry on, the hurricane lamps was gone, right, all thumping much, you know, and this, that, and the other. My God.
Were you one of those that attempted to get off the station?
Yeah, we all jumped off. Maybe half of us jumped off, you know. And, we got kicked about something rotten. The train was there for about over an hour. You have a train commandant, you know, and you have a train commandant. Down he come, interpreter, what a state he was in. He counted them. The other bloody huts, the other carriages was all right, you know. But he counted them, and he was smiling in German. And there was about 10 missing anyway. Now, he gave us to understand, like, the next station we stopped at, if there's one more man missing, he was going to shoot every bugger that was left in there, you know. So I was just giving him the old G up there. But,
You mean the old G up, they were shouting
at him? They were just shouting, he was getting madder and madder, you know, and the British jellies didn't know what to do, and...
Did the Germans treat you better or worse than the Italians as looking after you?
Why, the Italians were bloody hopeless, like, you know what I mean, discipline-wise and the lot, you know. And as regards being in Italy, like, as prisoners, they were pathetic-like, you know. There's no out-and-out cruelty. There was one thing I forgot to put in while we were in Capua. It's worth mentioning it now. There was me and Billy Crawford from Dumfries, both sergeants, both out here as the battalion. We had to go down for interrogation. And I don't know why these blokes are all big and fat. The Jerry was a big fat interpreter, a big fat Italian, well, he wasn't very bright now. And he asked him, nice sort of bloke, give us a cigarette each. I took one, I didn't smoke, right, but I took one. And he's asking us little bits of things, you know. Was it our first time in action? I would give it a ha ha ha, you know. We both agreed, yes, it was, like, you know, when we got to prison, and what were you laughing at and all this. And then there was another thing we used to do in the desert. NCOs, especially sergeant, you only had stripes on one arm, you know, and you had them on an elastic band. So I was in daylight, all the lads you with knew you were sergeant, you know, but you turned it that way. Because if you're about snipers, anybody like sharpshooters are looking for officers, looking for NCOs, you say. And that gives you a little bit of leeway. So you could pull them around. He wanted to know why we did that. You say, common sense should have told him, like. He said, why did you have stripes on an elastic band? He said, oh, well, lend it to somebody else, like, you know, and all this. Lend, yes, why? You know. He gave it up as a bad job at the finish, you know. But that sort of thing. But anyway, we banged us back onto the trucks, the threats and what he's going to do. He's going to shout everybody, like. And but by that time, when we got going, it wasn't long before it was breaking daylight, see? So the escape committee was off the team. And we could see the Alps, you know, you could a bit squint through this all, and very awe-inspiring. And I remember we went through the Alps, and what you could see through, peeking through this little bit windy, you know, you go through a bloody tunnel, same day as you black out, whoosh, and then you hit the daylight, and there's the Alps going up, like. And there must have been, thought there might have been an airdrop or something like that, because I remember seeing a lot of young Germans, every time there was a gap in between these tunnels, there was Jerry's lying about on the hillsides, like, you know. And finally we got through into Austria, and dropped off at the station, Spittel, they called it. And the story was, what that had to do with anything, I don't know. They said Hitler's grandfather had been born there, where there were certain suggestions what should have been done. And all that, but he was supposed to be born in Spittler, but and it was a lovely little village. We marched through it, you know, the bloody Alps is going up sheer like that, snow on the tops and the pine trees and that, and there's even an old fashioned blacksmith shop with the sparks flying, you know. And you know who's man in the village? Australian prisoners of war. Aye. The bookers had a good, I didn't blame the line, but they couldn't run back to Australia from there, really, could you? But they were on it, but they weren't in our camp. They must have a little camp of their own. But ours was a reception camp, you know, and they must have been bringing them out to Italy thousands at a time, same as happened to us, like. So, and in this camp in Spittel, the main diet was, you got a small quantity of black bread and potato soup. It was all potato soup, nothing else, you know. And there's no Red Cross parcels there, like, they just weren't organised for that, you know. And
was it a well-built camp?
They're pretty well, like, living huts. They were all wood mined, you know, they were all wood oats like and such as that. But to me, it didn't look like a camp waiver the depth of winter mind. You know, thin board walls and such as that, like. To keep warm, you'd want a tremendous amount of fuel. It was getting cold down, as a matter of fact. Really, we weren't really there long. And there about a week, I think, and we were allocated into batches, some to stay in Austria, and they'd be going on working parties, you know, and the rest of us were for Germany. And the main diet in Spittle had been a small quantity of bread and potato soup. Anyway, off down to the station again. We got our loaf of black bread and a piece of sausage, and then trained once again for Germany this time. We couldn't see much of Austria with the closed-in trucks. It took 2 days, I think, and in that time we were allowed out once in the middle of a busy little station. No idea of the name. An open toilet just away between 2 platforms, a hole in the ground. There was a long wooden bar across. All you did, you squatted on the bar and let go whatever you wanted to let go, you know. And there were dozens of people about on the platform. They wouldn't take any notice of you to that. You know, must have seen it time and time again, probably every week or something like that. And shouts and threats back onto the train away. We finally got to our destination, Stalag 4B in East Saxony, near Mulberg on Elbe, in the forest and farmland between Leipzig and Dresden. But these were miles apart, right, Leipzig and Dresden, you know, real forests and farmland and what have you. And this is a big camp accommodating maybe 15,000 or something like that. Each nationality had their own compound. And except for the Russians, you could mix during the day, but at night you were segregated in your own compounds. The Russians weren't allowed to mix at all. They were marching them out and working them to death, aye. They weren't in the so-called...
They were in a bad way physically.
Hmm?
Were they in a bad way physically?
Well, a lot of them were. He was working them without the minimum of food, you know. And they were trying to beg food off us and this, that and the other, you know. And there was a road ran through the centre of the camp along with a string of telegraph poles. At the first instance, we were herded into a small compound on the outskirts of the main camp. There was a string of barbers and wooden boxes. You sat on a wooden box, and a pair of horse shears took your locks off and everything like that. You got up minus your hair, you know. And the next move was to a giant bathhouse, hundreds at a time. You left all your clothes and whatever else you had. These went to large steam ovens for delousing. You went into the bathhouse, no soap or towels. When you emerged, you had to wait about an hour in the open till the ovens gave up your clothes. These, of course, were soaking. Then into the main camp, into another large compound. Some had bivouacs, or a few bivouacs, but most just dust on the ground. We're feeling the cold after the Mediterranean, Italy. Next morning, the sorting out began. According to Geneva Conventions, full ranks and above need not work for the enemy and stayed in the Stalag. Unless you volunteered, wasn't any volunteered. The rest were allocated for working parties all over that part of Germany. They all marched away. We were now put into a B North compound, 4 huts with about 470-odd in each hut. This must have been nearly November now. That is when you start to organise. You elect a compound leader and a hut commander, usually warrant officers.
Did you get a job as a hut commander?
No. I was full sergeant, but the warrant officers don't. Usually there's always somebody, you know. We had a CSM... He's out the Highland Division. He's English, but he's out the Highland Division. He's just his rank, you know. Our hut commander was a CSM, and the compound leader was RSM Moody. There was only one Moody. Even Spike would have gone on welding. he was out of the rifle brigade. He looked to be rather old to have been in the desert, but anyway, he'd been there. He was a pain in the neck to the Germans. We soon settled in. There was a wash house with each hut, with plentiful supply of cold water. The food was a problem. Without occasional Red Cross parcel, it would have been in trouble. Obviously not working for them, you got the barest minimum of food.
What might that be?
Huh?
What was the barest minimum that you got?
Right. 5 days per week, you're with yous with a small loaf of black bread. That was between 5 men. You shot yourselves into 5. And mind, believe me, you took turns cutting that bread, and you had to be exact. You know, spider hunger is the paper. And a small portion, you got a small loaf between five, a small portion of ersatz, change it, about as big as a small Yorkshire pudding, and it stunk to die of it. Ate it like. And you got boiled potatoes, this was 5 days a week. You got about four potatoes, and they were all these small, medium size, you know. And an issue of ersatz coffee, which they said was hawthorn leaves. Tasted like it anyway. On odd days, you may get a spoonful of sugar. You didn't get that every day, mate, but they give you so much sugar in between five, a spoonful. The bloody spoons had to be exact, you know.